Hello, this is Tony Donadio, a.k.a. Andarian, author of the Sanctum of the Archmage module series, and you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
This is so exciting! Wow! Where to begin?
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Trey, a.k.a. Ashercon Zelo.
Hi, this is Shauna, a.k.a. Cat Dragonstar, and we're bringing you tonight the 116th episode of the only Neverwinter Nights community podcast.
Dang, that's a big number.
It is. You know, if you keep this up, we're going to be at 117 or something of the sort.
I'd have never thought our number would have got this big.
Well, you fill a need, and you fill a need for the community, and you know, as long as, I guess, at least one of us is listening to this, you know, we just keep on trucking. But it is pretty amazing, 116 episodes. Yeah. Job well done, and probably why you all deserve the Community Contribution Golden Dragon Award.
Yeah, we got that last week. Last week?
Yes, that was last week. We were all jumping around and cheering and yelling when Andarian announced that.
I know, and I was working.
I know, and you were working. I just kind of thought, love, that you were afraid you weren't going to win again.
Oh, no. Is that what y'all y'all talked about, didn't you?
No, we didn't. No, actually, we didn't. Nobody said that. We may have been thinking it, but we didn't say it.
Yeah, but anyway, we'd like to give a special thanks to the AME and Darren and Taibe and all the other AME members for the award. We really appreciate it.
There are a lot of people and groups and players and builders that were on the show in 2008 that, you know, if they hadn't been around, the episode, the award wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah, so I'd like to thank all the hosts and hostesses first. Jay, so this is 2008, of course. Jay, who's not on the show anymore. Michelle, who's not on the show anymore. Dave, Eat to Surf. Skunk, a.k.a. Mark. I'm going to use his real name so everybody knows. Shauna, you were actually on the show near the end of the year.
I was. I started about October of last year.
Yeah, and Mask. Mask was a host, I think just one episode, maybe two, near the end of the year as well. So first of all, thank you all the hosts and hostesses for making that award possible. And then I'd also, this is a long list, but I wanted to read it anyway. This is everybody that was on the show in 2008, and I'm just going to read off my list here. And if I mispronounce your name, well, that's what I do. Fabian Cerruti, I think I said that right. Eric Carlson, a.k.a. Bearer, was on the show. And of course, we had on several times during the year Ossian Studios, Alan Miranda, and Luke Skull. I think we had Alan on more than once, maybe Luke only once. Lady Evening Star, Amraphiel. I can't say that. How do you say that?
I would pronounce it Amraphiel.
Amraphiel. Rafe Veldrin, Delac, Nalancer, Wyron, and Ernie Noah were all in the development roundtable that we had that year. And then later we had Domi Soto, a.k.a.
Melorinda.
Melorinda. And we had Adam Miller, of course, on, I think, more than once. Zach, a.k.a. Dirty Wick. Carlos and Skunkine as the DMFI we had on a show. You remember that?
I do, and it was a great show as well.
And then from the Realms of Anacolia, which I think we had on twice, we had Barry and Teresa, and then the DMs Feather and Raven were also on those shows. We also had an interview with Russ, a.k.a. Tiberius. We also had a player, as well as a builder, Robert, a.k.a. FFBJ. That was actually... that show was actually the first time that Skunk was a host as well, number 54.
Number 54? Goodness gracious.
We also had Rob McGinnis and Matt Rory from Obsidian on. That was a good show.
That was. Weren't they talking about their high-powered cars? And
yeah. Rob did not want to come on the show. I had to, like, bribe him to get him to come on. Patrick, a.k.a. Hellfire, and Eric, a.k.a. Baron from the Robinson Workshop. We also had Frank Perez, a.k.a. Ulysses. We had Zach Holbrook on, who's won many awards for his modding. And then, of course, from the Academy of Modding Excellence, we had on a whole bunch of times Ben, a.k.a. BGP Hughes, Tony, a.k.a. Andarian, and Chet, a.k.a. Sir Chet, and then, of course, Tyler, who also goes by Tybay. Also, we had the Community Expansion Pack team interview with Barry Ebersole and Throbblefoot, which I see Throbblefoot on Facebook all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me, as I was doing this list, it'd be cool to maybe one episode here real soon we do a Where Are They Now?
Oh, that would be. That would be.
We might have to do some research before we did that.
Probably a lot of research.
Brian, a.k.a. Wraith Veldrin. Did I already mention him? I already mentioned him, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
He was in the development roundtable, but we also had an individual interview. A Rec32, a.k.a. Matt, was on the show. I believe that was a player interview we actually did, which I wish we had more of those. That was actually good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dave did that. Wyron DeGerno, I'm not saying that right.
Gennargo.
Wyron DeGerno, a.k.a. Duncan Young, has been on the show. I think that was one of our awards interviews that we did. Matt, a.k.a. Cadron from the PRC, was on. And then I think the last interview that Jay did for the show was Alex Hugon and Greg Wilson for their mod that they were doing together. I already mentioned Tony. Excuse me. I guess we had an individual interview with Tony for his award that he got that year.
Oh, that's right. I remember that one. Yeah.
Tony Donadio. For his Sanctum of the Archmage series that he won awards for. Excuse me. We also had on the Community Tileset project team, which included Mask, Estelicious, and Banner. We also interviewed Lance Botel. I really liked that interview. I liked Lance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good one, too.
We also had Madeline St. Romain, Jeff Tyson, and Jim Grimsley on for, I think that was for the Citadel interview. And of course, we had the famous Axe Murderer on. We also interviewed Matt Deller, a.k.a. Poetic Colossus. And then, of course, for NWNCon 4 last year, we had Evan Klein, a.k.a. Venture, and Miranda and Tsunami on. If you remember, we had two events in the con.
Right. That were very successful, if I recall correctly.
Nobody showed up for the first one, and then...
Oh, okay. well, I knew there was...
And then those three people I mentioned showed up for the second one.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, that's where I got confused.
Marcus Wayne Schlegel, we had on the show. I think Skunk interviewed him. Since he's worked for him doing voiceovers. We also had Jeff, a.k.a. Negalith, of the Community Creature Pack, on. And, of course, the famous Mark, a.k.a. Grinning Fool, was on the show to talk about the auto-downloader that came out for NWN2. I'd be curious to find out how that's doing in the community, if everybody's using that.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to check on. Because it made should have made a tremendous difference for the Neverwinter Nights 2 community.
Okay, I'm almost done. I know I said it was long, but I'm almost done. We also had Jason Roy, a.k.a. J. Clef, and Johnny Ree, a.k.a. Ree from the Bouncy Rock. They were on the show. We had the famous Daniel, a.k.a. QK, also known as Cockroach, was on the show. And then Michelle interviewed Bobby Null and Justin Renard of Obsidian. Those were two programmers that worked on Storm Us a Year. We had Lord of Worms on the show. And then Skunk interviewed Ninja Weasel Man.
That was a good interview, too.
Yeah, it was. I already mentioned S Delicious. And then, of course, we interviewed at the very last show of the year, we interviewed David, a.k.a. Vivictus X, and Marcus, a.k.a. Bell Naroff, who were doing the 27 Gaming Group, which I don't think David's working on that anymore. And he's now, every once in a while, a host on the show, although we haven't seen him in a while.
Well, we're sure he's working hard away at real life, and we miss him, and he'll come back.
And also what was cool is one of the milestones that we had for 2008 was our 50th show was that year.
Yeah. Oh, cool. It's hard to believe that, you know, I was involved in 2008. But it seems like it's been ever so much longer than that.
Yeah, I know. So, hey, later in the show, we're going to have an interview with the Persistent World, the Isle of Sunset. That'll be cool.
And it will be, especially since it's now called something else, the Uncharted Midlands Last Gate.
No. It was Uncharted Midlands, and now it's Isle of Sunset.
Well, what do I know?
unless I'm wrong now, but that's what I thought.
I must have eaten the messenger when he came to my cave and told me about the which
I'm going to double check now because now you're making me doubt it. Okay. Okay, Striker, our own Striker B, got to do his first interview, so this is his first interview that y'all are going to get to hear.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it.
And he says the interview is done for the show. The name is Isle of Sunset, but they changed it a month ago, is what he said.
Okay, all right.
However, well, if you go to the website, though, it hasn't changed on the website.
Well, that's where it confused me because I went to the website. Silly me.
The one at the top, yeah, the website at the very, very top in the first post, it still says Uncharted Midlands.
Well, but the point is, regardless of what it's called, it's a heavy role-play world, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say.
NWN1.
Yes, NWN1.
So have we got some news this week, Shauna?
Well, actually, we have a lot of news this week.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that.
It kind of helps when we only do a show twice a month, you know. We don't have to worry about running out of news.
So I know y'all – oh, I'm sorry. You were going to say something else.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I know y'all talked about the NWN1 premium modules being removed from the BioWare stores, but I wanted to – and I wanted to thank Cellmaker for putting that in our news section and making us aware of that.
Yes, because I immediately scurried out there to go check and see, and Skunk did too. And we both came back and were happy to report that, you know, if you go to the store itself, your downloads are still there.
Yeah.
They just can't sell them anymore.
Right. And it does look like if you go to Atari, you can't find them anywhere on their website. So the reason I brought this up is I was wanting to let everybody know I've actually sent an email off to our Atari contact that we have. We have a couple of those, actually. And waiting to hear back from that. And I asked them if we could get a formal statement on the fate of the premium modules, whether they were going to put them up on the Atari website for sale or not again and make them available.
So stay tuned.
Yes, we'll let you know what I hear.
There are a lot of people who were unhappy about this move, but BioWare, this was out of BioWare's hands,
yep.
And so you still They're still available if you remember what your login is.
Yeah, I know, and if you read through some of the threads that are on the Bioware forums, they don't like you talking about it.
No, they don't.
Because they lock down all the threads immediately. Mm-hmm. Oh, evil Chris does.
Yeah, they're not. Well, I'm sure that there was a lawyer standing back there somewhere that said, "You do not discuss this in any detail for any reason whatsoever."
So I was cruising over on the vault and came across a persistent world called the Savage Frontier and Surrounds. Okay, that sounds weird.
that is. Well, that would be the Surrounds around the Savage Frontier.
But evidently, they posted some news that I guess it's called the Savage Frontier.
Yeah, that's what I look like.
Yeah, they've, with the way it reads, it sounds kind of funny. But anyway, they posted a lot of more content over there lately, and they wanted everybody to know. So if you get a chance, go check that out.
And if you're a Forgotten Realms fan, the Savage Frontier is a great place to play. So go check it out, and it's a PW that's been around for quite a while.
Have you played over there?
I haven't played over there, but I know several of the administrators.
Oh, cool.
And they're all outstanding. They're all outstanding folks.
So,
well, then I see you also found that the yes, hello, God. Say,
I've got you all foobarred, don't I?
I did. You did. You just threw me for the loop.
When I went and got my water, I messed you up.
You did. You messed up the rhythm. So stop it. Next time, make sure you've got your tinkling ice right there. Well, and I understand that you all have talked about this before. Was that southern enough for you? It must make me a southern dragon. But about the Neverwinter Nights 2 character builder.
Yeah, we've talked about that website before. I was cruising through my blog reel while I was looking for some news, and I came across that again. And I thought, hey, I'm going to mention this one again because it's so awesome. If y'all haven't had a chance, you need to go out to nwn2db.com. And it's called the NWN2 Character Builder Site. And it allows you to build any kind of character you would ever want to build. And play around with character builds. And keep them saved in a library, and you can go look at everybody else's builds. It's a very, very slick website.
That is slick. I'm going to have to go look at that. Sometimes, you know, you have an idea where you want your character to go, but it's different than figuring it out on paper so many times because you're, you know, having to do all your modifications there when it all of a sudden the screen pops up that says, you've gained a level. You went, oh. God, I was going to do something with this. I think this is neat.
Yeah, it's a very cool tool for people who are new to building characters for Neverwinter Nights, or, you know, or for D&D for that matter. Like, if you're new and you need to know, okay, I want to play a Master Divine Archer. How should I build that when I go create that in the game? You could come to this website and do a search. And Master Divine Archer, and then right, it'll tell you everything you need to do.
Oh, well, that's
it'll
cool.
Tell you exactly in the summary. It'll you for that one that I'm the Master Divine Archer. You want to be a fighter, wizard, arcane archer, and divine champion. Fighter level 12, wizard level 1, arcane archer level 9, and a divine champion level 8. And so. You should start your character out, and it gives you the summary of, you know, all the attributes that you should set for that character. It's awesome. And of course,
that is. I'm bookmarking it now.
And you can spend hours out here on this website. I have one night before, the first time we found it.
Cool.
It's just amazing how much information is out here.
And it's so wonderful that we're going to post the link in the show notes.
Yes.
So that you don't have to go, now, what was it they said? we understand from Bouncy Rock that they are planning, hoping, praying, whatever, to get Misery Stone out to the community before Halloween.
Yep, that's what I heard.
So that's neat. So I'm looking forward to that too.
As Jay Clef says, as Jason Roy says, so hopefully that light is not a... He goes, I can see a speck of light at the end of the tunnel, but then he says, hopefully that light is not a train.
And don't we all?
So maybe for Halloween. They have a thing with Halloween, don't they, over there?
Yep, yes, they do. They certainly do.
That's cool. Also, we wanted to mention in the news, Tony, a.k.a. Andarian, he is released. He says on his blog, he said he finally released version 3.2 update to his Sanctum of the Archmage chapters 1 and 2. So if you haven't played that or you want to replay it with some updates, go check that out. He also, with the okay of Ninja Weasel Man, who we mentioned earlier in the show, Tony was given permission to host his romantic animation suites over on Tony's website. So I guess he has those over there as well.
And I've already downloaded those.
Oh, you have?
Yes, I have. Some of the screenshots on those are really very nice. Very nice. And Ninja Weasel Man, didn't he win he won the Dragon last year, didn't he?
Yeah, last year for 2007, I believe he won.
For 2007, for his prior animations.
Yep. So, okay, well, that's the news for now. So now sit back and listen to Stryker B do his first interview with some of the folks over at the Isle of Sunset Persistent World.
I'm curious on the Isle of Sunset server, and my name in real life is Colin.
Okay, well, my name is Zarathustra, and I'm the co-DM on the TIS, and my real life name is David.
And this is Stryker B, you're listening to the Neverwinter Nights podcast. The first question I have for you is, what's the Uncharted Midlands server, and what does it represent for you, and how does it came to be?
Well, I mean, we've renamed it, obviously, the Isle of Sunset recently. We've migrated website, I don't know if you've seen. It was the Uncharted Midlands server. And actually, the reason for the change is the reason why the Isle of Sunset came to be. The Uncharted Midlands was a very, very free-form server, I suppose I would say. The intention was to give power to players. To the extreme, and for that reason, the scenario was set up so as to have an absolute minimum of NPCs and an absolute minimum of, in effect, things that could disenfranchise the players collectively. However, what that did was disenfranchise the players individually, because nothing was achievable without a number of players doing it. Therefore, if the players didn't act in concert, nothing happened. And this, in effect, was what happened. So, really, the reason the Isle of Sunset's come into being is to allow for what I think we would say would be the maximum of player empowerment and player achievement. I think that's our aim, I think, across the board for any type of player.
Yeah, I think one of the issues was with the Uncharted Midlands, at least, was actually that there was maybe too much freedom, that in the end nobody knew what to do, was waiting for everybody else, and everything needed to be discussed. And, well, to be honest, in a sense, it was really fun, the idea, but it didn't really work. So what we're trying to do now, with at least the Alf's Sunset, is slightly, at least from the DM team, to push forward at least storyline, events, yeah, and things like that, as well as push along a bit with the player governments that we have set up, so that at least the players can now focus entirely on their own characters, the development of it, and also, mainly, the reason why they came here in the first place is to focus on role-playing itself now, instead of dealing with so many out-of-character issues, like how do we set up a government, it's all fun, and maybe we'll allow it later on, but now we're going to push forward it a bit, take a little bit more control, and in the end, make it more focused. And I think it's working out right now, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think in the experience of TUM, it was very much the case that players want to play their own characters first. That's what's fun about role-playing, is you create a character.
Indeed.
And you have that character react to external events. And a lot of people like to play flawed characters. That is what a good role player does, is a flawed character. But a flawed character can't then build a society from scratch. The kind of people who do that in reality generally, it doesn't happen. These people don't exist. They're mythical, mythical beings in history. They're sort of mythical lawgivers, laying down constitutions and leading people in adversity. They're probably not that fun for other people to roleplay around because they're so perfect. What we're trying to do is allow people to play imperfect characters, a wide variety of characters, for everyone from the person who wants to be running around, playing the cocksure rogue who is out to earn some money, to the dedicated warrior who's a bit stiff and starchy, who's trying to protect the people. I mean, TUM didn't even have people to protect. There was no civilian population. That's how light on NPCs we were. There were about four NPCs living alongside the players.
Yes, I remember. I played with a bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was literally a barren mountainside, whereas the current server is, there is a civilian population. There are some NPC soldiers that aren't really involved in the colony. The concept of the server is that there's
the power to the player?
The RP concept of the server is effectively there's a colony being settled on an island that is the PC settlement, as it were. It has an NPC population, but the PC is the leader of this colony. But the colony is part of a larger empire which has its own governor and its own soldiers that are on the island for their own purposes, to allow us to interact with the players and to, in effect, as David said, drive along a plot that players can be involved in or as little involved in as they wish. In effect, we're hoping to have the best of both worlds, of a more traditional server where there's DM-led roleplay and then a very free-form server like TUM where there's player-led roleplay. It's both, for both styles of play and both styles of play. That's our aim.
Yeah, it's actually fun. I used to play on several servers like that. And the next question will be, how do you manage to focus all that, what you do right currently? How do you manage to focus everything what you do? I see the forums and... it's a lot of things going on right now, and how do you manage to handle everything that you do? I see you're mostly from Europe.
I'm from the UK.
Yeah.
And David's from the Netherlands, if that's right. We're both quite wordy people, from what I understand. So that's where the law has come from. Obviously, we've worked quite hard on the law. We had a bit of downtime between TUM and TIS, and that's generated sort of a law that's cast specifically to allow this freedom of players to choose their own background within a framework that's going to allow for DM interaction. I think... For me, how do I stay focused? Would be that this is the kind of world I would like to play in. I think that's what helps me stay focused. We don't play in the world really. We DM in the world, but it's the kind of world that if I was involved in it more casually, I would enjoy my involvement. And I think that is what keeps me focused. I would say I interact with the players in the way that I would enjoy being interacted with.
I think also what you mean with focus, you mean how do we focus the project itself, right?
Yes.
Well, indeed. In that sense, what you see now with the forum, what's happening is, of course, an explosion of activity, because it's all starting up. Everybody needs to understand the lore that Colin and people have made for it. So we're trying to reorganize it and make it something more readable and more streamlined. That being said, slowly on, it will become more easier to read, especially when we can create our own website for it, where the lore is easily readable, and where you can just look on the website and see, this is how the world works, and these are the rules we've set up. Because, of course, if you put it on a forum format, you need to search for it yourself, and that might be a bit of a trouble. Now, on this world itself, how we focus it... like you said, Colin here is from England and from Netherlands, so in Europe that sees us too, but we also have US players. And what we do then is we have especially attracted a few US time play DMs who can DM for our American friends. And also sometimes when Colin and I don't feel the need to work the next day, anything, we'll do long-term sessions way past in the midnight. But usually what happens is our player numbers now aren't extremely high. It's a select group of people who always come online. But what we do now is that the forum will arrange a time, or the DMs will always say an event will be planned this and this day. Sometimes impromptu we'll do an event just for fun. But usually we say maybe on Saturday from 8 p.m. GMT this and this event will happen. And then most of the time, we'll get about, what is it, I think at the Uncharted Midlands, we'd even get our highest number, I think, was 20, maybe 24 people. And that's pretty nice. Oh, no, excuse me, 20 people around that. And that's pretty nice. So that's how we focus it. What we do is, it's more maybe a traditional way of playing D&D, more tabletop in that way, is that we arrange a time to have an event, and players will flock to us. And in the meantime, players can walk in that world on their own and interact with each other and create their own storylines.
I mean, some of the best events you can have in an RP server are the ones that are generated by the players and are impromptu. And I mean, I DM'd one of those on Thursday night, I think it was, and it was quite a sort of nice and relaxing. It effectively a background event. It didn't drive main plot, but it was nice to see the players interacting. We do try and do that, but as David says, we are trying to bring players together and kind of get players that wouldn't perhaps normally play with each other for whatever reason to play together by advertising times. It seems to be working so far. The concept of the world is built on player interaction, the player government part of it. The idea is we have a guild that handles building, we have a guild that handles fighting, we have a guild that handles trading with the mainland, and the players involved in each of those guilds have to work together to, you know, achieve their goals effectively, whether it's developing the settlement or making money. So.
Yeah, exactly. And like Colin just said there, there are a lot of things to do at the server, at least we plan to have it do that. What we had with the Uncharted Midlands, I mean, you saw it yourself.
Yes.
And what Colin said as well, it's just a barren mountain in a barren place with mists and everything. It was good atmosphere. It was also a bit scary,
It was extremely scary. You don't know when you're going to die or where you're going
to... Exactly, yeah, and that was pretty fun. But the problem was, at least for us DMs and some players as well, was that we didn't feel there was enough to do. We're kind of, we feel tight with what we had, because we kind of inherited the server from somebody else, and it wasn't actually our own lore. And the problem was, on a mountain, you can only do so many things. We had orcs, we had undead, and basically that was it. And what we have now with the Isle of Sunset, is that basically we have, I think, 3 regions right now, and each of those regions have their own distinctive taste. So we have like a Lost World, Indiana Jones-like vibe. Up in the north, I think we have... well, now I'm actually giving away spoilers, so I don't think too many. But
we have definitely various different regions you can get lost in. I mean, it was something I'd like to say about the sort of the... Like you mentioned it in TUM, you felt in danger when you left the settlement. That's something we have tried to retain, but make it much more random. And Lissa's done a very impressive random spawn generator. So now the creatures don't spawn in the same place every time. They will spawn somewhere randomly in the area. And it's very randomized what will spawn. So you might find, you know, you're walking along the river, and, you know, there's various, I think there's various types of, beasts that are living by the river that you can hunt and eat. And it's all very safe and idyllic and feels very nice. However, there's a 5% chance of a giant lizard erupting out of the river, which will eat you alive, quite simply, unless you spot it before, you know, before it catches you. Not only does this promote scouts and rogues and various, you know, hunter-type characters that can sneak through the wilderness and scout out for a party of fighters, it's also an exceptionally randomized system, so there's always the danger there, even though you're still able to travel, perhaps more so than you were in TUM, because, you know, we had to just, because the system was less random, we had to just put the nasty monsters there full stop, so you always knew on the first map there was one orc, the next map there might be three orcs. Now it's very, very, very random. It makes the place feel wild. I mean, even without DMs being there, there'll be things cropping up that players want to see and that players can react to and enhance the player experience.
Yeah, I think with what we have now, the Isle of Sunset that we made, it actually encourages, instead of what happened in the Uncharted Midlands, was, like you said, death was around every corner. And players would never get out of the settlement anymore. What we have now is a more, slightly more, open world where players are actually encouraged to get out and actually, you know, have fun and roleplay and have adventures. So that's what we feel comfortable with. And also there's, this lady which we keep talking about, Lissa, which is our, well, how do you describe it, Colin? Our script, mistress or something?
Oh, goddess.
Yeah, actually. yeah. And she actually irons out all the bugs, and she makes, she basically the whole world is dependent on her scripting skills. So everything you see from crafting and creature spawning, it's actually all done by her, and we're quite grateful for her help with that. And she makes sure that the world is, it won't be entirely bug-free, but we're working towards it, at least.
She's very quick on crushing the bugs, and her, like I say, her systems are exceptionally randomized for spawning. The crafting is exceptionally player friendly in terms of allowing maximum player customization. We're just very lucky to have her, I think. I think the world's very lucky to have her.
Indeed. So, from what I understand, the world now is still permadeath server or not?
It's still a permadeath server, yeah.
We actually discussed about it, but we felt a permadeath server adds to the action and moreover the excitement that you don't know. Well, the problem is if you don't have a permadeath server, is that you won't grow entirely attached to your character because you feel he's throwaway and you won't be entirely responsible for your own actions. If you understand what I'm trying to say here.
You will
I'm not going to die anyway. Well, you could just go and chop that, I don't know, that dragon's head, even though you know 100% sure you'll die. But if it's permadeath, and your character won't come back anymore, then you know. Then you'll stay in character, that's what I'm trying to say.
It has positives and negatives, permadeath. I think as a storytelling DM, permadeath makes it difficult to run plot lines directly through characters, which is was a problem with TUM, that it was hard to keep a storyline going when the only characters in the storyline were the players' characters, and they would die on a regular basis. which is why, again, we've had the best of both worlds, because we can now have NPCs to allow the storyline to spread between different characters, which may be played by the same person when their characters die, so they can then be re-included within sort of wider plots. I think I definitely agree with what David said about permadeath. I think it's an important feature of the world. We've gone for a very realistic feel, both in the lore and, even in the monsters. We have some sort of weird and wonderful monsters on the island, but they're not shooting fireballs. They're tooth and claw. It's more like wild animals than anything. Yeah, and I think, without permadeath, you completely break the feeling of, the feeling of realism.
Mm-hmm. So the lore currently changed from the Uncharted Midlands, or it's the same lore?
It's quite different lore. We've gone for a very Like I said, we've gone for a very historical feel, but, excuse me, I, for one, I'm not too fond of, like, the medieval stereotype fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
I find it slightly limiting, because a feudal system is limiting, and that's what a realistic fantasy medieval world would be organized as. And, it feels a bit cartoonish to me, and, I think, as such,
yes.
The lore, we've shifted it to a different historical epoch. We've moved it basically to ancient times. The empire that has founded this colony is effectively modelled on the Roman Empire. And all the provinces are modelled on cultures from, say, before 1000 AD, effectively. They are mished and mashed and changed and certainly not one-to-one historical stereotypes, but that's the rough influence we're going with. We're going with fantasy Romans feel, almost. And that's carried through into... that has had a knock-on effect on the sort of development of the rest of the lore. For example, the gods have become much more... much less a pantheon divided into good and evil gods, and much more gods that you appease and get blessings from, or you anger and get cursed by. The same god could be the same, you know, could be a different thing to the same people, depending on how they treat the god. You know, the gods have a positive and a negative side. I think David might want to say a bit more about that, because he was a big contributor to that. And our treatment of non-humans has been influenced very much with us thinking of how would standard fantasy stereotypes, well, we didn't want to go with standard fantasy stereotypes, but insofar as we have capped them, how would they react to a dominant, effectively world-embracing empire ruled by one faction of humans that is somewhat rough and ready in its treatment of its subjects. Do you want to speak any about that at all, David?
I think, like Colin said, is that we wanted to steer away from that stereotypical medieval fantasy world. It's also mainly because we felt it was actually quite limiting, because a fantasy medieval world is actually filled entirely with stereotypes, and players who come in there to roleplay, without them actually knowing it consciously, they always try to play according to that stereotype or force others to do that. For example, if you meet an elf, you always assume he's arrogant. If you meet a dwarf, he's a drunk Scotsman, stereotypical speech, and hates orcs, and does this and that. And the point is, it feels kind of tiring to keep playing that. It's fun, I entirely agree with that. And we've kept some of those aspects in. But what we try to do with this world is make it as fresh as possible, and therefore interesting and original for players to get into. And because those stereotypes about the gods and the races and other things, and also about magic, because they're so different, players can now start to look at it with new eyes and finally actually roleplay something they're not so familiar with, and thereby creating actually something, something original, instead of the same old things they've always done before. The elf that... that's distant and aloof and snipes from afar. I mean, those things are still there, but now you have more freedom to steer away from those stereotypes.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And that's, I think it's something that's one of the more successful parts of the lore has been the extent to which it's possible to sort of break new ground, I suppose. Quite pleased with that, actually. We've seen it even with sort of our lowest player numbers at the moment. We're seeing players who are coming in embracing these opportunities and playing some quite original characters, actually.
Yeah, in that sense, I would also like to thank our players. What we have here are, right now, I think maybe 10 dedicated players who will come in for these events, what I talked about, which we'll announce beforehand. And these players are actually very enthusiastic, always passionate about role-playing. And it's always fun to role-play for them, DM for them. Yeah. Because it's fun. And what we do here, and what we want to do as DMs, is have fun together and create the world with each other.
Mm. Well, that I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, a lot of the one of the things we've kind of encouraged players to do is write their own province for the character to come from, so that other players can use that. That's it's almost a hangover from TUM, which had very much collaborative lore, but it was more anarchically collaborative. Whereas this is there's a bit more of a framework because the empire overlays the provinces. We've certainly had contributions from two or three players of very high quality in terms of like the province from which their character comes from. And several suggestions otherwise, for example, languages or disposition of the Imperial Army, things like that. These have all come generated from player requests or player contribution even, to sort of create the world together somewhat.
No, exactly. And I think what Connor said, like, for example, with TUM, the Uncharted Midlands, it was almost anarchy concerning the own player input. And the problem was, while we had the freedom to create the world with each other, there was always the danger that nobody would actually create it. And if I have to give an example, we had, for example, dwarves, and there was lore made for it. And basically, it was just dwarves live there and there, now make your own lore. And people did that. However, afterwards, people stopped doing that, and players in-game would actually encounter problems with, am I now actually depicting this dwarf right or not? And this problem won't arise anymore with the Isle of Sunset, because what we do now is, while we give enough freedom for players to create their own provinces, their own things, and we always listen to their own inputs for the lore that we created, the DM team, and the lore writers will always push forward to make the lore as complete as possible, so players will never have to encounter problems with depicting their characters right anymore, while allowing enough freedom to properly express their own inputs and their own customization of their own character.
I think one of the overriding philosophies that Lyssa has with regards to a Neverwinter Nights world, and that I have, and that David has, is that we want to run a world that's as inclusive as possible. We want a world that that a range of different styles of players can enjoy. And obviously, this is a hardcore RP world, so we're not talking here about the lead speaking power gamers coming along. To use a slightly derogatory turn of phrase, but. We're talking about in terms of role play. We want role players of various different styles, various different ways of doing things to be able to enjoy themselves. If someone wants to come along and role play, they should feel welcome in TIS. However much or little they wish to dip into it, I suppose I would say. We're certainly not about, enforcing our own particular view of how things should be done. We will moderate it, which I suppose was a very different thing to say.
Okay.
No, absolutely. We encourage as many people to come along. And even if you never role-play before, we just say, try it out. At the beginning it will feel strange, but we'll always encourage input you as long as you try, we think it's okay.
Yeah.
And at start you maybe say instead of you say YOU, you will say only put the letter U in it, and we will just encourage you to write it full out for the other players as well, but we'll never say straight in your face, when you suck, you don't know anything about role playing, go away from my elitist club. We want you to come along. And basically, and this is the basic idea we'll always uphold, me, Colin, and Lyssa, is we want people just to have fun, while exactly. Keeping in mind that the main goal is role-playing with each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's role-play is about interacting with other people. The important thing about role-play is having an interaction with a character that someone else has made that both of you enjoy. That is what we want to encourage as many people to enjoy as possible. We're not interested in winning gold awards for role play, even though I personally do think some of the role players we have playing on TIS at the moment are some of the best we've ever seen. They're certainly far better than I am. I'm certainly not saying that we don't encourage high quality role play, but what we do want to do is encourage people to be better role players, and show people that role playing can be fun. And I think, it's that inclusive net that that is one of the big reasons why we made the change to TAS, because TAS enables us to offer more to more people, and, you know, offer the sort of the role play light element to some people, and then the more severe politics to other people, and then the exploration and, you know, various different things people can role play, various different ideas, very different character archetypes people can role play that actually have a function in the world. I think this is, you know, one of the reasons why we made the shift.
I understand.
Well, exactly. Well, there's just something to do for any kind of role player. If you want to go discover, explore, we have enough room on our islands to do that. There's mystical jungles, forgotten ruins, enough things to do. If you want to get into heavy politics, there's also enough room for that on our islands and the lore we've set up with this Roman-like empire that we've created. And there's just something to do for any kind of people. If you just want to talk, sit down and sit in the imaginary tavern with your imaginary ale and just have fun with each other and stay in character, and there's just enough things to do for everybody.
All right. Well, I think we covered almost everything here, and thank you for the interview.
Thank you very much as well.
No problem at all.
But we didn't come across too confusingly.
No, you didn't. You actually explained a lot, and have a nice, good luck with the new project, and good day.
Well, just one more thing.
Yes.
Let me think. Everybody who listens to the podcast, we invite you to come along and at least try it out.
Okay.
Hopefully there will be a DM about, or you can just give us a personal message on our forum, which I hope the interviewer will provide a link to. And
just
come along and have fun and try it out for yourself and see if it's something for you. And the DM team will always be friendly to you, and our players are also quite friendly. And if it's not your cup of tea, then no problem at all, no hard feelings. But at least try it out. And I'm sure if you like role-playing, then you will love the Isle of Sunset.
And we're back.
And we're back. Before we get back, though, I'm hoping that maybe he's, speaking of music, I hope maybe he got some music for his guest. You okay?
I'm sorry.
Do you need to get some water?
I need to have a drink of soda.
Wait, dragons don't drink water.
No. We just...
They eat rocks.
We just pop the top on a night and drink their blood.
Oh, that's cool. I just got a visual of that. That was awesome. I was watching, speaking of dragons, I was watching, I think it was a History Channel two nights ago, and they had a show on, basically it was a show about real dragons. They actually, they have actually found some bones, they thought they were dinosaur bones, but they think they're dragon bones, because,
really?
You know, dragons are in every culture's lore since, you know, way back.
And that has always been, you know, the skeptic's response is, well, if they really existed, there would be, you know, skeletons of them somewhere.
Right. And they think they found one, is the way I took the show. I did miss the first 10 minutes of it, so I don't know if it was if there were dragons, this is what their skeleton would look like. But what was so fascinating about it was they told how they what's the word I want to say? What did you use? They depicted how a dragon could really breathe fire and could fly, even though theoretically with the way a dragon is structured, is built, they really it would be hard to fly with that heavy body with so many muscles and stuff.
Well, that's what they say about bumblebees too.
But the way they depicted it was in the skeletons, they actually found one in ice, you know, kind of like the mammoth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way the dragon will fly is it had these baffles near its lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And it would actually naturally produce hydrogen. And so hydrogen is lighter than air, so the dragon would, as it became older, it would be able to fill up these baffles quicker and also keep them filled. And that's how it gave itself enough buoyancy to fly as well. And then also the hydrogen also was the source for the fire.
For the fire.
Yes.
Well, that would be nice. I mean, it would be really neat if they had found something like that.
And the skull, not only did it have the long, you know, meat-tearing teeth, real sharp mm-hmm. teeth, they also had molars in the back of the skull. And so what they thought that was for was, you know, back then when the dragons lived, titanium was a natural occurring mineral.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to fuel the fire that created that was created from the hydrogen, they would go up onto the high mountains and eat titanium.
And they would chew it up and convert it.
They would use those teeth to grind it. It was actually kind of cool.
I mean, that does. That's...
So I don't know if they were just kind of saying, okay, this is, if there really were dragons, this is how they realistically could have existed. Because, I missed the first few minutes of the show. But anyway, it was very fascinating.
Well, I'm sorry I missed that.
I'll try to look that up and
include that
in the show notes. Surely it's online somewhere.
Yeah, surely. Surely it's on
some. I'm sorry. Shanna is online. You're not Shirley.
Come on. Ah, the great airplane, Evan. Don't call me Shirley.
But anyway, I thought that was cool. Sorry I diverged.
It was a great diversion.
So, a few more news items, and then we'll wrap up the show.
Well, I would want to take this opportunity to talk on behalf of Neverwinter Connections and their con that's coming up.
Who are they going to con?
Probably the people who think they found the dragon skeleton. But the title of since it's going to happen over Halloween weekend, it's called... the theme is Eternally Yours, The Spirits Are Willing, How About You? This is going to take place on Friday through Sunday, October 30th through November 1st. This is the fifth online convention for both Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2. There will be in-game and chat-based seminars. There will be lots and lots of games. New players and experts alike are welcome to join. We're going to post the link to the web page that lists the details. One of the things that we're seeing as kind of a shortage on is Neverwinter Nights 2 stuff. So if you're an NWN2 DM or if you're an NWN2 persistent world, this might be a good time to showcase your talent and your people and what you've done. So we'd like to encourage people. This is really a wonderful event, as Trey talked about earlier. The podcast took.
We had some events in it last year in NWN Con 4, and also I think Skunk basically ran that thing or helped run it.
Yeah, Skunk and Carvan both wore themselves to a frazzle, and my Persistent World Sojourney took place. We also had some DM seminars that were in-game seminars, and I wound up winning the grand prize.
There were lots of prizes last year.
Yes, there were lots of prizes.
And you won the sword.
I did, and it's hanging on my wall right now as we speak.
And I'm over here on the new website. well, the website for the event, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a lot of open games already listed.
Yes, there's a lot listed, and there needs to be a lot more. You know, we all do understand that it is Halloween weekend, but it does take place over 3 full days. So
if we want to get an event set up, who do we contact?
Carvon at Neverwinter Connections is a good person to contact. If you're going to set up a game, you can set that up on Neverwinter Connections, just like you always do. And then Carvon and his assistants, his merry little band of worker bees, will take that information from Neverwinter Connections and put it on the NWNCon.net site so that it's all in one place and all set up and squared away for you. If you want to set up an IRC chat or whatever, then you need to talk to Carvon and let's make this a good event for the community at large that is still an incredible place to be.
I guess we need to decide if we're going to have a couple of events, the podcast.
Yeah, probably so.
Maybe give away a shirt.
Time is getting short, so these decisions have to be made fairly soon.
I know that's what everybody wants is a podcast shirt.
That's right. That's right.
So who did the artwork? It's kind of cool.
A man named Tarridus, Tarridus. He's a great DM as well, and a friend of both Sojourney and as well as Neverwinter Connections. And he is a great graphic artist. And speaking of not too shabby there, I was looking at your little banner on the front page of our site.
I whipped up a little banner for winning the Golden Dragon Award. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah, I just took a couple of their graphics and slammed them together.
Well, there are people who couldn't slam it together and make it look good, and you did. So congratulations there.
Thanks.
Let's see here. What else have we got?
I noticed you mentioned some more new music from Travis Richards.
Yes.
Sonovox.
Yes, Sonovox. This is some good music that would be great for a large city because it's very majestic, but in some instances it's very lilting and playful. It's another very nice piece of work from Travis Richards.
Speaking of Travis, he actually sent us an email. I guess y'all mentioned him in episode 115 as well.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, he sent us an email thanking us.
Thanking us for mentioning. How sweet.
Yeah. And so, of course, I wrote back and said, you're welcome. And told him thank you for, it's stuff like that. The little things that everybody does like that in the community that makes the community what it is. So.
And that must mean he listens, too.
Yes.
You think?
I know. So let's play a little bit. I actually downloaded his song. Let's play a little bit of it.
See if I can get it. Oh, that would be great.
Awesome. Yeah, so that's a little bit of that song. I'm not sure how long it lasted. I didn't listen to all of it. But
that's cool. Gorgeous. Yeah. Very, very impressive. I wish I could do something like that, but oh well. It's not where my talents rest this lifetime.
So thanks, Travis.
Yes, thank you so much for continuing to post your music.
So it looks like E.C. Patterson's been busy.
He is. So, you know, one of the things that has frustrated easy for me to say. One of the things that has really frustrated at Neverwinter Nights 2 builders. One more time. Yes, thank you for.
I'm messing with you now.
Edit that out. One of the things that has really frustrated at Neverwinter Nights 2 builders over the lifetime of the new game is that plugins get broken every time a new patch comes out. And sometimes the authors manage to recompile and update them, and other times, you know, they just kind of sit there and stink. Well, E.C. Patterson has set out instructions, very precise, easy-to-follow instructions on how to recompile a Neverwinter Nights 2 plugin so that it will work with all of the updates.
Yeah, using Microsoft Visual Studio C# Express Edition, which I actually have that on my machine, and I've used that before. So just for those out there that don't know, I think I know what a plugin is, but there might be some who listen who are not builders or not players or whatever. What exactly are, when you say a plugin for the tool set, what do you mean by that?
A plugin can be anything as simple as a script that helps you do something better that perhaps the tool set didn't really cover to begin with.
Ah.
And so these plugins are like, I'm trying to think of, a good example of a plugin is one that takes your what you have built in Neverwinter Nights 1 and converts it to Neverwinter Nights 2.
Oh, cool.
And so that's a pretty impressive piece of work.
Yeah.
But if it's not updated when each new patch comes out, then it becomes useless.
So that can become broken. And
right.
That happened with the 1.23.
Right,
Hotfix or whatever that came out.
Right, it came out, and it happens with every patch.
Oh, it does. Okay.
And so, somebody has to update them, and especially if somebody uses one of these tools, and they're really used to using it, and all of a sudden the game gets patched, and then what they were using was useless to them. It's really frustrating. So E.C. Patterson laid out a very, very well done, very precise way of how to update those plugins so that you don't have to wait for the author to do them.
Awesome. Thank you, EC. Oh, I said that from all the builders and everybody out there. They speak through me now.
Yeah, yes, they do. I noticed them with their little hands up your back there, making your mouth move.
You know? I used to build we used to play Unreal Tournament 2004, and I used to build levels for that. So someday when I have some time, maybe when my daughter's grown and
and at the rate of I might
build some modules for NWN2.
Neverwinter Nights may well still be around when your daughter is grown. How old is she?
Of course, it better be.
Right.
I mean, it's only a couple years old now, so.
Right. Yeah, and look how long.
Well, it's as old as the podcast, so I guess it's 3 years old now.
Yeah, 3 years old.
But look how long NWN1 has lasted. So
has lasted and continues to last, and still being, you know, built for, and custom content is still being created for. So who knows how long this can last?
All right. Well, Shauna, I appreciate you letting the dragon join me tonight.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm glad that we had this time together.
Here, have some night.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Pops the top.
Okay, folks. So that's it for this week. Until next week.
Get in game
and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2009.
Well,
hey, our birthdays are only 6 days apart.
Well, that's kind of scary, isn't it? We have two Virgos doing a podcast. I wonder if that means anything.
Although you're way older than I am.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. I'm way older than a lot of people.
I won't include that in the show. That'll be just between you and me.
All dragons are older than you are.
Oh, that's true.
So, you can include that. It's okay. Newsflash, Trey figures out that dragons are older than he is.
Okay, that's better. I'm sorry.
Well, and you even sound better, too. Yeah. There's nothing.
I was losing my voice there. You know, I only have so many words I can do a day, and I probably already ran out.
Oh, no, that means I have to do the rest of the show, because I haven't used my allotment of words for the day.
And plus, it wouldn't be a show without my tinkling ice.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So without further ado, here's the interview.
And we're back.
I bet y'all missed me saying without further ado, didn't you?
Well, I know I did. You threw me off balance there. I hardly knew where to go with it. but we are back.
Oh, wait. I messed up. I got ahead. See, I've been out of pocket so long, I forgot how to do the freaking show. You're supposed to slap me when I do stuff like this.
Consider yourself dragon slapped.
Or bite me or something.
or flame you, as the case may be.
Sorry. So later in the show. Okay, so we did the later in the show. Right. I'll edit that.
You'll edit that. And, but if you didn't have them, well, just edit that out, because I had no idea where I'm going at or what it sounded like or anything else. But say.
Hey, that'll be a good blooper there.
Hello, she just wandered off.